The Learn Me Something Podcast with your hosts, Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum.
Hey there, all of our good friends once again in podcast land. My name is Rich Plum. As always, I'm here with my good friend, Aaron Stewart.
Thank you for joining us.
Alex Knight's hanging out by the controls, driving this ship. So that means once again, you're listening to another wonderful episode of Learn Me Something. This one is actually about something that's actually quite serious. It's schizophrenia.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, schizophrenia. We put it up on our Facebook page on, you know, what we should do next. Some people commented that schizophrenia might be a good one. So, hey,
well,
here we go.
Well, it's one of those ones, I mean, I know from, you know, even when I was a kid, I mean, it has a, had a completely different idea behind it than I'm sure the research today, you know, would actually...
Yeah, interesting you mentioned that because a lot of people associate schizophrenia with, say, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Exactly, where it's the two different distinct personalities and one of them is only in control at one point or the other.
Completely wrong on what schizophrenia is. Yeah. It has nothing to do with schizophrenia, and that book apparently is the cause of why so many people associate multiple personality disorder with schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. They're two completely different things. With people with multiple personality disorder, they take on different personalities.
Now there's an interesting point. Like in the book, does it actually mention schizophrenia specifically, or is it was just at the time that schizophrenia was kind of becoming diagnosable?
Here's the thing. I never actually read the book.
I might have it long ago, but I don't even think I
saw the movie, to be honest with you, or any of the remakes.
I remember the Bugs Bunny version, at least. That was pretty much the...
That I did see, and I don't think it actually mentions
schizophrenia. Which was, I'm sure, the best representation of the book anyway. So.
But the article I read that mentioned this mentioned that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is one of the main reasons people associate schizophrenia with multiple personality disorder. And it very clearly is two completely separate disorders. They have nothing to do with one another.
Interesting.
So what is schizophrenia?
Indeed. What exactly is? If it's not multiple personality disorder, what exactly is the...
Okay. So schizophrenia actually means split mind from the Greek. So schizo means split and friend means mind. So schizophrenia means of a split mind.
Now, is that not what multiple personality disorder means?
No. There's whole minds, just multiple different minds. Like, they're different people in the body that take on, but they can... So the difference between schizophrenia or what schizophrenia is with split mind is just... And I'm not a doctor. Let me clarify this.
We're just trying to figure this out ourselves.
So schizophrenia, it just seems your entire mind is just not working. Someone's playing a video game like Mortal Kombat and they're just hitting all the buttons. That's what your mind is pretty much, it seems like is happening. They have very disconnected thoughts. Like I said, it seems like everything is broken. With their minds are just a little bit abnormal to all of our regular minds. Like their cavities inside are bigger. Their brain cells are actually larger. They have less gray matter. There's multiple things in their minds that are just not functioning properly.
So there's actual physiological differences in their brain structure.
Mm-hmm. There's gene markers. There's about 100 or so gene markers that a person will have that is in some way linked to schizophrenia. Now, there's no specific gene that says, yes, you're going to have schizophrenia. There's about 100 or so markers that will indicate if someone could have it.
So even if you have all 100 of those markers, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be schizophrenic.
Yeah. It's a really crazy disorder because, and it doesn't affect a lot of people, but 1% of the population are going to have schizophrenia.
And they're all marked by having larger
every single one is going to have, they're not all the same, but their brain is definitely different than everyone else's brain in some small
and distinctive
degrees.
To schizophrenia versus all other kinds of...
Schizophrenia, there's a multiple symptoms that happen in schizophrenia. A lot of people will say it's delusions or hallucinations. Now, that's where people misassociate that with multiple personality disorder because people with multiple personality disorders have different voices.
Okay.
People with schizophrenia, one symptom is that they will hear multiple voices and they will hear people talking to them.
Interesting. So like the Son of Sam that apparently received instructions from his dog, was it?
Yeah, the neighbor's dog.
Okay, so would that be multiple personality or schizophrenia?
That's schizophrenia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he has schizophrenia.
Okay, but multiple personality would be voices inside your own head that aren't necessarily manifested outside?
Nope, multiple personality is 1 minute I'm Rich, the next minute I'm Doug, and I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you, and I don't know.
Totally
different personality.
And with no interaction between the two in the brain kind of thing?
Well, I didn't research that part, but knowing the movies I've seen, yes, they know each other.
Yeah, inside the head, they kind of duke it out inside the brain for control and such. Eh?
Me, myself, Irene, perfect example of multiple personality disorder, okay? And then the schizophrenia would be the movie Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. So schizophrenia onset usually happens between 16 and 30 in males, and then in their late 20s and early 30s in females. So you can live a perfectly normal life until you have what's known as an onset.
Okay.
Now, like I said, genetics play a huge portion to that, but not the only portion. The scientists are certain that there's no set, or they don't know the set genetic code that's going to cause someone to experience schizophrenia, just certain markers, but it's usually environmental as well. So like a socioeconomic, like if they're really struggling financially, have a lot of stress in their life, something typically is going to trigger that.
So like a psychological stress versus...
And it usually happens post-puberty. Because post-puberty, the brain's going through a lot of changes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's 16 to 30. That's when your brain is having all of its rewiring done, basically.
It can happen earlier in kids, but it's really hard to determine because kids have a really high imagination. So, you know, people have imaginary friends and whatnot. So you can't determine at that age if someone has schizophrenia until they get older. It's like, hey, you're 14 and you still have an imaginary friend. Well, something may be wrong.
Or if that imaginary friend is actually getting them to do things and...
Now that's the one thing that we should talk about is people think that schizophrenia are violent people. And that's a very, very small percentage of the population of schizophrenic people. It's a minute issue with them. Like people with the Son of Sam and other serial killers. Okay. Very small. Most schizophrenics are a danger to themselves.
And probably more due to external influences versus the actual things going on due to schizophrenia inside their head.
Right. Hold on to that point because that's a good one. I won't get back to it. But okay, so schizophrenia usually starts at a younger age. Anytime up until 40, you can get schizophrenia. So I think we're out of the clear.
And it just kind of depends on the trigger, hey?
And it couldn't actually happen. I saw up into 80 people getting schizophrenia.
Really?
But yeah, it's a mixture of the trigger versus your genetics.
So you would have those, like, you know, however many of the 100 markers for schizophrenia in your genes, and at some point your brain would just say, oh, that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah.
And just decide that now you have an imaginary friend.
Yeah, and not only that, because that's only one of the symptoms, okay? So there's symptoms and they're broken up into three categories.
Oh, okay.
So the first category is a positive symptom. And a positive symptom is something that's going to add to you that other people don't have.
Like an imaginary friend or something.
So first is hallucinations, okay? That's the most common one. They'll see things, they'll hear things, they'll smell things. The second one is delusions, is where they may think that they're royalty, or they may think that they're famous, or that they can transform into other people, or they think that a lot of it is paranoid, that they're being controlled by an outside force that's not their own, or that people are hunting them, or persecuting them, or, you know, they're very paranoid.
See, and that's like, you'd think that, you know, a teenager, that's kind of their kind of whole growing up thing is just kind of putting themselves into outrageous situations possibly. And so you'd think that, you know, trying to diagnose a teenager at that point would be
tough,
kind of tough, right?
Yeah, and it's really hard for family members because it's so hard for psychologists because there's so many things that come into play. And there's not
especially
just
if you have
thing.
The stigma already attached of it being the Dr. and Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing versus the actual fact of it being a different kind of, right?
Yeah.
And so if you already have that background, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be tough to talk to your family even about that kind of thing going down in your life.
So another one is thought disorders. And this is the big one where you can kind of tip off that you're dealing with someone that maybe has schizophrenia is their thoughts are very fragmented and they can't really piece together a conversation fluently. They can't focus on one thing while you're talking to them. They'll completely lose focus.
That's talking to my teenager in general.
Well, you may want to pull out the DSM, what's it called again?
Yeah, the DSM-4. Yeah.
Yes, and check to make sure. A lot of times they use words that only make sense to them.
Okay.
Or they'll start rhyming. And sometimes it gets so bad where they're just spitting out gibberish that seems completely normal to them.
See, again, that sounds like any teenager I've ever, right?
I mean, but it would be bad. It wouldn't be the lingo. It would be like repeating the same word or just rhyming for no reason whatsoever.
Just like a nervous tick kind of thing versus not trying even, to be cool.
Yeah, not even that, to be honest with you. They'd be talking to you and being like...
And we just space out?
Yeah, you know, the blue mountain is coming to the butterflies and I don't know, I can't even think of it.
Yeah, well, that's...
You know, and just stuff that makes complete sense to them. Mm-hmm. I remember walking in, I was in Surrey, if anyone knows Vancouver area, Surrey, you know, kind of some of the more interesting people hang out. And I was walking into the bad area and I was walking into the grocery store and a guy comes up to me and goes, it felt just like this to me and just grabbed my arm real quick. And it just made total sense to him.
Mm-hmm. He was telling you a story. It was a very short one.
Yeah, he knew the parts. Yeah, I didn't.
Exactly.
And they also have movement disorders. So they may appear as agitated body movements. A person, may repeat certain movements over and over again.
So is this like an attack they have kind of thing? Like it's a schizophrenic attack where they'll be normally conversing and then suddenly they'll just break into gibberish?
They go through episodes. Mm-hmm. Like I was looking on YouTube and... It's pretty well broken down, some episodes that people go through and kind of experiencing what someone with schizophrenia would see, and especially with the positive symptoms. Mm-hmm. You know, you have someone who's watching TV and then all of a sudden they hear voices, and it's voices talking to each other, but talking about that person in a very negative way. Like the phone will ring and, oh yeah, he's so stupid, he is going to answer the phone.
And you just kind of hear it through the walls.
Watch him do it. Watch him be an idiot and go and answer the phone. They're watching you. Uh-huh. You know they're watching you. And I have them on the show notes that you can look and see the videos. And mm-hmm. they're quite terrifying.
Yeah.
Because we talked about this during the epilepsy episode and during the ghost, is you are so susceptible to what your brain's going to do for you. And if your brain just isn't working... And you can start seeing or hearing or smelling things that aren't there, and you have a hard time determining what's real and what's not real. You know, you're sitting
there. We have a hard enough time determining what's real and not real as it is, right? Let alone when your brain is actively fooling you. Like that's,
Like that movie.
That would be a nightmare.
I know the movie, The Beautiful Mind, like it freaked me out when it was revealed that he has schizophrenia and those two characters weren't actually, you know, real or existed. I watched a TED Talk with a girl that had schizophrenia, and she said that she would be followed around by a clown that looked like Pennywise from It.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that was her thing. And she was up there talking. She's like, oh, and by the way, he's sitting in the audience right now, laughing at me, telling me that, you know, these horrible things about me. And I have to live my entire life with this clown sitting here saying things to me. And how is that? I mean, just imagine having to live with that.
And how would you even shut that out? I mean, you couldn't, anytime you'd blink, it would just go somewhere else or be in a different, right? Because it's inside your head and it's, brutal.
So those are the positive symptoms. So now there's negative symptoms, okay?
At least with the multiple personality disorder, you wouldn't understand, you know, you would be part of a different thing, so you wouldn't even...
you wouldn't even know.
Exactly, you wouldn't even know, right?
You'd wake up and
there was a clown? What are you talking about? That's crazy.
I was the clown.
Yeah.
So negative symptoms are things that they'll take away from a normal person. So one of it is very straight face. There'll be very lack of emotion in situations where they should have emotion.
Okay, but now you were saying that the internal monologue of the people that they're hearing is a negative commentary on their life?
Typically. Now, it could be anything.
And that's a positive feedback as far as?
Well, not positive, in fact, it's good.
Yeah.
It's adding something that other people don't have.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So positive are things that you have that other people don't have. Negative is things you don't have that other people do have.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Okay? So the flat effect, they're very... level-headed when they should, or not level-headed, but very limited emotions in situations where they should show a lot of emotions.
Okay.
They lack pleasure in everyday life. They lack the ability to begin and sustain planned activities. And they speak very little even when forced to interact. So those are the negative symptoms. And there's cognitive symptoms. And I've seen this mentioned a few different times in a few different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There was cognitive, and then there was, I think, disruptive, and there was another way that I had not heard of before. But what it has to do is with the brain and how the brain's working.
Yeah.
So
poor executive functioning, trouble focusing, problems with working memory, slower processing speed.
So cognitive defects are commonly presented in people with schizophrenia, but they may be difficult to recognize as part of the disorder. Often they are detected only when tests are performed. So it could be poor functioning. Not a lot of get up and go as well. I think that might be the negative effect.
Now, and is that due to the brain cells being oversized, or is that due to...
No, they don't know.
Oh, okay.
Like, they really
so
don't know.
So they're basically checking for something else. They find that they've got a bunch of these markers for schizophrenia, and so they test them for that. And
yep.
Okay.
Trouble focusing, paying attention, problems working memories, and slow processing speeds in the brain. So like I said, it just seems like their entire brain just isn't firing. It's not communicating with itself properly in almost every regard.
Right.
But you have a semblance of a person that knows how to take care of themselves and, you know, for the most part seems healthy, mm-hmm. except their brain just is not working.
Well, especially if they were, you know, up to 16, normally functioning, having a good time, mm-hmm. and then suddenly something happens that, mm-hmm. I mean, isn't necessarily even any kind of trauma or anything, hey? It could just be a normal brain
event.
Could
be things like a drug abuse even.
Oh, right. So it is actually more of a traumatic event kind of thing that will lead to, or?
Again, it could be, it's anything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be a specific event, but a lot of times I heard it could be a specific event.
Right.
It could just be just stresses of growing up. It could be just how you're raised. It could be bullying. It could be brothers or sisters.
Your brain just decided today to fire this way instead of that way. And
it just went on repeatedly.
Huh, interesting.
So here are the top symptoms of schizophrenia, the top negative symptoms. One, of course, is depression. The cognitive impedance, so you can't format information properly. And that's so, I mean, if you think about that, that's simple, but that we use that in everyday life.
Yeah.
I mean, talking to somebody, being able to have a conversation like this and follow it, or the other person can follow it, you know?
See, that does seem like that cognitive impedance. I love that term, actually. That seems like a lot of the conversations that we have with people nowadays. Eh?
Sometimes. The inability to concentrate, oversleeping or insomnia, empathy, and the inability to express emotions.
Apathy, you mean? Sorry?
What did I say?
Empathy.
Did I? Apathy, sorry. Deterioration of personal hygiene. That is apparently quite a chronic issue with people with schizophrenia,
They just decide they don't need to bathe anymore.
Or just, I don't know what that's about, but I saw that in a few different places.
Interesting.
Yeah, just not awareness maybe, or I'm not a doctor, like I said. They'll also sometimes have extreme reactions where they will be crying when a situation where they should be laughing, and they'll be laughing in a situation where, you know, if someone's funeral or talking about someone's that they love that have died, something that's truly sad for them, but they're laughing instead.
Really? So like the exact opposite reaction of what you would normally... Yeah.
Or very extreme reactions too, which is weird because they also have the flat reactions. So it just seems like they're just not.
And that's where you'd think that would make it even more difficult to diagnose, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, especially if you're talking about, again, somebody that's already kind of going through some sort of growing pains as a teenager in general, and now you're adding actual cognitive.
So again, of course, the delusions, which everyone, or the delusions and hallucinations, which is what everyone knows and thinks about with schizophrenia, but not everyone has that. And then obviously the disorganized speech. So if your parents or sibling have it, you have a 10% chance higher of getting it than everyone else.
Does that matter more on the mother's or the father's side?
Nope.
Or doesn't matter, right?
Straight across the board. If you have a brother or sister that has it, you have a 10% chance higher of getting it than anyone else that doesn't have it. Hmm. But it affects 1% of the population. So it's not a huge, like there's not, I mean, you said narcissism was 6%.
Yeah.
So 1%, it's not a huge
But it also seems, disorder. I mean, narcissism seems like more of kind of a you know, not a actual problem with the brain. Like it's not an actual, like your brain cells aren't growing, right? Like it's more of just kind of a...
Maybe an upbringing.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's societal maybe.
Yeah, an
upbringing
but
this seems to be more of like an actual like physiological thing with the brain actually causing changes to your personality.
So if your brother has it or your parents have it, 10%. If your identical twin has it, mm-hmm. you have a 50% chance.
Really?
Higher of getting it, but not 100%. Yeah, which I thought was pretty crazy, you know?
See, and again, if it comes down to a trigger, sometimes you miss it, sometimes, right? It's like the Russian roulette. Play so many times and eventually you may get it, but hopefully not.
Apparently some of the other things that could cause it, environmental factors leading up to could be exposure to viruses, malnutrition before birth, problems during birth.
Now, would that be like a meningitis or something? Like an actual swelling of the brain? Or are there any specific...
Were the problem? Oh yeah, any problem during birth, I guess.
I suppose just any kind of fever or something like that, where you're exposing the brain to any kind of
That would be wrapping the umbilical cord, maybe loss of oxygen to the brain.
Oh, so this is like before they're even born.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about kids with schizophrenia. I saw this video on that too, which is terrifying. Because imagine this: imagine you have a kid in your house that their brain just is not working, and that they want to hurt their dog or their sisters or their brothers, you know, that are just babies. And as a parent, because you're a parent, I'm a parent, what do you do there? I mean, you have someone that, you know, to put a bell on their door so you know when they're out, so you can protect your siblings.
Well, and then you take it to another level. I mean, like, you think if you come from a religious background and you're more prone to think of a religious, you know, explanation versus a scientific explanation, well, now suddenly your child is going through something that, you know, you're not taking him to the doctor to fix.
Yep.
Which is not necessarily going to help things.
So here's some early warning signs you can use to check if maybe one of your kids has schizophrenia.
Now, is this, now, can you actually look for these before 16? Like, are these?
Yeah, you can look for them. I mean, there's been diagnosed kids with schizophrenia well before 16, but it's harder to, because they don't have, or I heard somewhere that it has to be 12 or older before they'll actually give a diagnosis for it. I guess that's when the imaginary friend or the...
When it becomes less of a developmental kind of thing. Yeah.
So early warning signs, they feel like their brain is not working.
Well, I mean, how many
feel like that, that most of the time?
How many people does that apply to?
Every day. Feeling like their mind or their eyes are playing tricks on them. Seeing things and hearing things, or hearing voices that are not real. Hearing knocking, tapping, clicking, or their names being called. Again, very confusing thoughts. A massive one with schizophrenia. Vivid and bizarre thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, and see, again, like, you're trying to diagnose a child with confusing thoughts. That's just, that just seems like a lunatic's venture there. Good luck with that one. What do you mean my child's confused? Good luck.
Okay, so sudden and bizarre changes in emotions. That's my daughter. She has that.
Yeah, right.
Peculiar behavior.
I guess the more bizarre...
Bizarre relative term.
Yeah, that's
term,
a relative term. Yeah, yeah.
Peculiar behavior that seems unusual. That's my daughter as well. increased sensitivity to light, sound, smells, or touch.
See, that's, I'm sure any parent could, you know, point to any one of these and be like, yeah, that's my kid. Yep, that's my kid. Oh my goodness, no.
Well, here's the bad one.
Okay, all right.
The concept that people are out to get them.
Yeah, that, okay, there you go.
Yeah. That's a clear sign of schizophrenia. I mean, that's, we watch those videos, that's the big one where everyone's out to get you. Don't open the door, they're going to hurt you.
So it has a real tie to paranoia, yeah. Eh?
Not only that, you know what I was really surprised with is how much the voices just kick the shit out of the person.
They're just always negative, hey?
Negative, like, oh, I can't believe this guy's doing this. Look at this guy doing this. Oh, yeah, I told you, he's such an idiot for doing this.
And I mean, we all have that internal monologue, right? But it actually becomes an external voice that they're hearing that's not their own,
Yeah, different voices, and they think of different people. It's really creepy, man.
Let alone that, I mean, as it progresses, you would have more voices, and, you know, trying to drown them out would become harder, eh?
Yep.
Yeesh.
Fearfulness or suspicion that isn't warranted. They're withdrawn from others. That was me when I was younger. Severe problems making and keeping friends. I have that problem now.
Yeah. Again, check. Damn it.
difficulty speaking, writing, focusing on managing simple tasks. Yeah. Not able to read sentences properly is another one.
Word salad.
So how do you know if you have schizophrenia? Because it's
indeed
a tough one.
How do you know? And because again, like, going through that list, I'm sure at some point or another, every one of us would probably fit pretty much all of those. And that's
have it, something on
like
there.
Is there a length of time that you would have to have those consistent kind of thoughts going on? Or
well, here's
again,
the thing.
Is there like what are the specific?
So you need to see a doctor. You cannot self-diagnose this.
I would hope not.
Okay,
that would
please don't self-diagnose this. Go see medical attention. If
no
you
matter
think.
How many of these you actually do fall into the category of, it's
still go and check.
Still best to.
Okay, so they have to show at least two of the six of the symptoms. Okay, so they have to show two of these symptoms: delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech, catatonic or coma-like days, and bizarre or hyperactive behavior. So if you have two of those, and they have to be monitored over at least a month or so.
And so past that, like you were saying, it actually makes physiological changes to the brain. Is there actual like tests that they can run past that, or is it just for looking for psychological things that they're basing this on.
Yeah, there's no, you can't hook someone up to a machine and say, oh yeah, you got it or not. It's just strictly diagnosed.
It actually makes changes that they can actually see. No. The actual brain structure.
No, there's none at all. They do a post-mortem when they do autopsies on people.
But they can't run like a...
No. But your brain cells are a bit bigger. You must have that schizophrenia that you're talking about.
They can scan, using magnetic resonance, they can scan the brain to say... Just, you know, what parts are activating or what are not, right? So you think that somebody would have hooked up a normal brain and a schizophrenic brain and actually shown the difference between them on a working level.
Yeah, I didn't read anything about that. Hmm. The only thing I saw about it
I thought you mentioned at the beginning there that there was like physiological changes to the brain where the brain cells were larger.
Yep. Yeah, there are.
And there's no way of testing for that? Oh, because they can't actually test the brain cells without doing it when they're dead. Okay,
exactly. Okay. So it's all post-mortem,
We're not going to cut open a person's head to... Okay. All right, there you go. Can you detect the structure of the brain to actually diagnose it that way versus just waiting for the symptoms to play out on a psychological level?
See, the thing to think is that the people with schizophrenia, their brains could be bigger. Like you have a cavity inside of your brain that has fluid. Mm. And in multiple cases, people with schizophrenia, that cavity was bigger than it would be on you and I.
See, and that's the problem with having cavities in the brain is that can have all sorts of different, depending on where it is, how big, right? Like what it's made of, what it's doing. That can have all sorts of bad, any cavity in the brain you'd think would be not a good thing.
You'd think not, but apparently we have some. Okay.
Well, I'm sure there's some. Well, even when you sleep, apparently your brain shrinks inside your skull.
Oh, that's freaky, man. Yeah. Don't tell me that shit.
Well, it's a good thing. It's so your brain can actually do its trimming.
I just don't even want to know what my brain's doing when I'm sleeping or when I'm awake.
Oh, you were in the wrong place, my friend. That was episode 33, the dream state.
So of those symptoms for 1 month, they have to demonstrate at least two of the six symptoms for 1 month, and then they have to show some sort of mental disorder over 6 months. Once they do that, the doctor may evaluate them as having schizophrenia based on the DSM. So Hippocrates, again, savior of the day, is the one who says, you know what? I don't think this was God doing this. Because, so take schizophrenia, take people behaving like this.
Well, and back in the day before they had any idea of, you know, they just noticed that for some reason, 1% of the population at 16 just seems to go a little batty.
Yeah, every now and then. And obviously, like they always do, they thought it was some sort of a evil spirit.
Well, you
God's
start hearing voices
something.
Talking to you from outside, let alone negative ones, always telling you like the worst positive, commentary that you could imagine coming to your head from external sources that you can't see or ever interact with in any way other than them constantly just harping on you for...
You must be possessed by something.
Well, that would be the logical thing to go to. I mean, that's where, like we say, go to a doctor. Don't, right? Your church cannot help you, unfortunately.
So going back in history with people with schizophrenia, the earliest signs of something closely resembling schizophrenia can be found back in Egypt in 1550 BC.
Wow.
That's when they discovered the skulls that had the holes punched in them.
Yeah,
to release the evil spirits that they thought were inside of the brain.
Interesting.
I don't think that worked.
Well, I suppose it would depend on what the problem was.
Maybe they opened up and, your brain cells are bigger. You must have schizophrenia. Someone was on to something.
They did have some sort of ancient knowledge that we aren't privy to anymore. But
for the longest time, people thought it was a punishment from the gods. So Hippocrates, who was the first person to say, you know what, guys? I don't think these are gods doing this. I think it's something mental.
So what was the treatment back in the day? Was there...
So
other than punching a hole in the head, was that?
Get this. This is crazy. It was Hippocrates, who's the one that came up with the how to treat this, where he said there was fluids in the body. There's four types of fluid in your body.
Yeah.
There's black, there's red, there's phlegm, and then there's the fourth, which is yellow.
Yeah, something like, okay, yeah.
And he said those fluids are out of balance. So,
which was basically like bile, I think, was kind of what it was associated with.
Yeah, and that was the way to treat people up until literally the 1700s. Or even later, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't write it down, but I should have.
No, I remember that one too, where there was the four, and like I said, it was just a matter of bringing them into equilibrium, right? And it was a matter of they would actually put bile into, I think, into people if they felt that that was...
It's weird, isn't it? Because one is phlegm. What is, well, you're a little shy on your phlegm. Well, hang on a second. Again,
when you get sick, it's often associated with bile and phlegm. Those would be the two kind of symptoms of a lot of the right diseases they would have seen back in the day, right? So, that, you know, short of your skin changing color, that was kind of the only other way that they could tell.
So, anyways, he was the one that says, you know what, it's not this, it's mental illness. And he came up with four humors. That was it. The four humors treatment.
Okay, right.
Then it was the Romans who said no.
They said like vapors and stuff too, wasn't it? Or was
I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah. It seems crazy to me. Okay, so it was the Romans that brought it back to God. They said, nope, it's Christianity. God's punishing these people. So that's why they have schizophrenia. And they really, the burning of the heretics, apparently a lot of them were schizophrenic people. I looked that up online and I saw that horrifying article that I sent to you guys where someone in today's day and age
burn
is...
the heretics.
Hey, this was all right. We did all right by
back
burning
the
heretics.
Day, yeah.
It was
back
fine.
Day, we used to just burn them to death.
Yeah, look up burning the heretics and you see this article about someone who thought, hey, we burned the heretics and I'm fine with that.
Well, I see it now, you know, nowadays
you know why
we
they
know
did
that there's a cure.
You know why?
Not a cure, but...
What, to heretics? You burn them. You know why they burn them? That article actually said it.
Purifying?
It's crazy. No, because it's picturing what they're like when they're in hell. So during that painful period, they'll realize they don't want to be there anymore and they'll turn their life over to God.
But I mean, you know, as opposed to like, wasn't the whole idea of this whole Christianity thing supposed to be about repentance?
Something like that.
Right? And yeah. I mean, it's a little, I mean.
That's how you make them repent. You burn them.
Sure, but they don't really have much of a chance for making much past that.
It was just crazy. It made me a blood boil.
It's a little.
Jeez. My humors were out of whack when that happened.
That would put my humors out of whack too.
During the Middle Ages, religion was used again to treat schizophrenia. That's when they had asylums, and a lot of them were just dumped in asylums. That happened right up, honestly, until like the 1900s.
And I'm sure they could have used any number of things to just pick people off the street and throw them into an asylum.
They used bloodletting, prayers, and confessions to try to cure schizophrenia. So the things started to change during the Renaissance where you had people rising up against, you know, religion. And there was a book published called Deception of Demons, which argued that mental illness was caused not by demons and gods, but by natural causes.
Heresy.
Mm-hmm. The book was banned by the church and the author was declared a sorceress.
See, it was heresy.
Can you imagine that they used to declare people sorceress and people like would, okay.
For advocating science, that was the best part. Let alone it was a woman. So, I mean, of course, that was the church was going, oh, God, no, we can't
have
that.
Crazy ideas you're coming up with saying all this mess. Okay, so how do you treat someone with schizophrenia? So 1 in 5 people that have schizophrenia will completely recover from it, but there's no cure for schizophrenia. Mm. You will always have it for the rest of your life. And people that have, you know, more or less cured, they could relapse into episodes and they could have, you know, the delusions again and the paranoia. And the hallucinations.
So would it be the same kind of trigger that started it in the first place that would set them again? Or is it different?
No.
It's just kind
it could
of
be
stress, any kind of stressor, pretty much, right?
It could be anything.
Yeah. And it would be, like, would they be more prone? I guess once, if you can, like, is it a medication that helps?
First thing they do is they take antipsychotics. Now, here, I saw this article or listened to this thing on YouTube just before I came here where it says people with schizophrenia, one thing that they see is they have additional dopamine receptors than other people have. And the additional dopamine could have something to do with them having additional experiences that normal people wouldn't have, which I thought was really weird.
So can dopamine cause hallucinations?
I don't know. Apparently. It has something to do with it.
Interesting.
So first step is to take antipsychotics. Now, a lot of people don't like taking these things.
Yeah, I can see how people would, you know, have a problem with taking a pill that...
Well, it does some things. Causes blurred vision, dried mouth. And who likes dried mouth?
Yeah.
I don't.
No.
You know, you're trying to sleep and you got dried mouth. Forget that. You're having a rough night. Drowsiness. They have muscle spasms and tremors and they gain weight.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun.
So a lot of times people with schizophrenia will not take the pills for that reason. So once you take this antipsychotics and you have the episodes under control, then you go into psychosocial treatments. Now that's going to include individual therapy where they're going to work with a psychiatrist and kind of normalize your thought patterns and try to help you cope with stress and learning the early warning signs of a relapse. Then you're going to go into social skills training and they're going to focus on how to communicate with other people, how to take social cues, and how to just basically participate in conversations and daily activities. And then family therapy. because family is the most important part. I mean, if you watch all these videos with people going through these episodes, the biggest part for me at the end was when a family member came in and you got these people. So the simulation was one where a pizza delivery guy came and, you know, the voice, oh, don't take that pizza, it's poisoned. Oh, look at the idiot, he's answering the door. Don't answer the door. He's answering the door, paying for the pizza. And then, so then he has an episode and he throws the pizza everywhere.
Yeah.
And then goes, hides in the closet. And then his sister or mother or whoever it is shows up. They're super calm about the situation because you have to understand that this person, their brain just isn't working right.
See, and that's, you know, like we try to do this on the show a lot is separating, you know, the disorder from the person, right? Like it's not the person that's default for the way their brain is.
They didn't choose to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to remember, here's 10 tips for handling someone in a schizophrenia crisis. Remember that you cannot reason with them. This person may be terrified by his or own thoughts or feelings.
If you've been having voices in your head talking to you the whole time, yeah, mm-hmm. I'd be terrified too.
Do not express irritation or anger. Like, I just paid for that damn pizza. Now what are we going to eat tonight?
Yeah.
You're such an idiot because now you're just one of the other voices.
Well, exactly. And now that voice is added to all the others.
Yeah. And the voices were right.
Yeah.
Don't shout. Don't use sarcasm as a weapon. Now that's something I really have a hard time with.
Damn it.
Man.
I've had my sarcasm banned before.
Count me out. Try to decrease the distractions, turn on the TV, the lighting, radio. Ask visitors that are there to leave. Avoid direct and continuous eye contact with the person. Avoid touching them. And then sit down next to them or ask them to sit and sit down next to them. That was the one I saw is that people were on the ground. So they just got right down there with them and they were talking to them like they were.
Oh, okay. It's all good.
Yeah. Or just a really loving voice.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Which would be really hard to do.
Well, you'd think you'd want to be the exact opposite of the voices that they're hearing, right? So all that negative commentary, you'd want to be the positive commentary, which would separate you from what they're used to hearing, right? And would give them hopefully something else to focus on.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so let's go over quickly some stats here on schizophrenia. So about 1% of the population has it, like I said. And a lot of people think that the prison population has a lot of schizophrenics, which they do. About 25%-ish that I saw of the prison population is schizophrenic, but they're not in there for violent reasons. They're usually misdemeanors.
Right.
They're more prone to injure themselves than they're anybody else.
They're confused.
20% of people with schizophrenia have tried to kill themselves, and about 5% per year do. So after 10 years of people diagnosed with schizophrenia, 25% will recover completely. Another 25% will improve and be relatively independent. Then 25% will improve but require some network support. 15% will be hospitalized. And then 10% would be dead, mostly from suicide.
It's still mostly treatable at least, eh?
Yeah, we're getting advancements. I mean, we're not throwing people into mental institutions and
not for hopefully extended lengths of time. I mean, you'd think that, you know, there would be a certain amount of...
Not mental, like just like not the asylums.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know,
the conditions of which I'm sure were horrific enough to begin with.
So that is about all I got on schizophrenia, my friend. Most people in schizophrenia, about 20% of people in jail are schizophrenic, about 1.2 million Americans. No, sorry, 1.2 million Americans have schizophrenia, of which 20% are in jail. There you go. I say that's a lot of people in jail. Tell you what.
Being probably undiagnosed. And see, again, with there no being actual... There are no tests that you can actually give someone short of waiting for the symptoms to start showing up of exactly what would put them into jail in the first place, right? I mean, if you have a voice in your head telling you that you're nothing.
Yeah, and they also need the family support and people to go out there and help them get the support.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people that have this mental illness go untreated. About 55% of those, 55% not getting treated for schizophrenia. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Seems a little high.
That's
16% of that are not getting treated because they do not have health insurance.
Yeah.
Maybe we should fix that. Another 20% because it's too expensive to fix.
And see, that's like, is the treatment really actually expensive? Or?
Well, yeah, you're doing psychosocial and then antidepressants. And you know how the states are, man. They'll jack up prices like you don't even know. 32% won't seek treatment because they wanted to solve the problem on their own. You can't really solve that one on your own,
no,
guys.
No, and that's where, again, the science kind of, you know, they've tried, you know, they tried burning it out of people and that didn't work. We tried putting them in asylums. That didn't work. But now that we actually have actual treatments that are actually effective.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention that you wouldn't really be fully capable of treating it on your own.
Sure, yeah.
Because of those serious symptoms.
Yeah.
Your disjointed thoughts and inability to talk. And
like, when would you know you have a problem?
Well, exactly. Right? Especially if it's coming from inside your own head, right? Other than the first time you mentioned to somebody, you guys don't hear those voices? But then you'd be immediately, you know, shot down and you'd be put into a place where you wouldn't want to talk about that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got that negative commentary, you know, reinforced in your head.
Yep.
And now you just don't want to talk about the stuff that's actually going on in your life. And I think that kind of is where it's just a matter of recognizing it's not a demon.
Yep.
Right. And this is an actual thing that you can actually treat and that we recognize is an actual psychological issue that's actually a part of the actual functioning of the brain versus a demon attacking the inner soul of this wonderful person who they used to be.
Yeah, we just need more empathy, man. We just need more empathy and understanding what's happening and social support. And I mean, you judge a society on how it takes care of its sick and its old.
Yeah.
And people with schizophrenia, they're the sick. You know, there's nothing they can do.
Yeah, and I think that's
not a choice.
That exemplifies a lot of what we try to get across here is that it's not we're not trying to blame anybody for any of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's not you don't have a choice when you get sick, right? And that's what I think the whole American healthcare system seems to forget is that, you know, you don't have a choice.
Yeah, it's like someone said during that LA or Las Vegas shooting, it's the shooter's rights to own those guns, but all the people he shot, it's their privilege to get medical treatment. Let that sink in.
Ah, oh, Jesus. Wow. And on that note.
That's all we got on schizophrenia.
See, and that's geez. Was that guy diagnosed with any?
They don't know.
Well,
right? He wasn't diagnosed at all.
He didn't have any like history of violence or anything, did he?
No, he had nothing. Yeah. Just right out of the blue.
Because that's usually like if there's, you know, the more they study the gun violence, the more they're finding that the domestic violence seems to be an actual precursor too.
Yeah, I was listening to Stuff You Should Know. They did, can't remember what it was on.
A wonderful podcast.
Arrival. Right? One of the most, well, hardly Arrival.
A potential, you know, year. We'll get there.
They got 16 million listeners a month.
Hey,
we'll get there.
Exactly.
Get there one day.
Exactly. Well, anyway, thank you very much for listening. That was pretty much what we got there.
Okay. That was all.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. You can find us on Facebook. Like us. We love that. Find us on the Hologram Radio Network. We are on Patreon, Twitter, yes. Twitter at the LMS podcast. That.
What I want you to do is go to patreon.com/hologramradio. Donate anything that you can part with. It truly does help us keep the show running. In fact, you know what? Give us a dollar. That's all you need to do. Just a dollar.
Every dollar helps.
Every dollar does help. And if you aren't able to do that, we totally understand. It would be fantastic, though, if you could just take the time to just share this podcast with one person.
We would love that. You know, if you found anything in here that you enjoyed, please share it with everyone you know. We're always looking for new listeners and trying to get the word out there. It's a podcast, so we rely on all of you to help us get to new people. All right, well, everyone, thank you very much for listening again. And as always, Florian Dendrite, may your brain cells flourish.
You've been listening to Learn Me Something with Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum on Hologram Radio. If you like the podcast, please rate and subscribe in iTunes and share it with a friend. To find other interesting podcasts like this one, please visit our website at hologramradio.org.